Welcome to Band of Gamers Podcast, Episode 8. My name is Greylock3491, and this week I'm joined by DBQ Hams.
Hey guys, welcome back.
And Zeus Adamus.
Hey, what's up everybody?
Welcome back to the show, guys. It's always a pleasure to do these shows with you and to have you back. And like we do every week, we start out the show talking about what we've played, what games we've played this week, what we've been gaming with, and we'll start this week with Zeus Adamus. So what have you played this week?
It's been kind of a weird mix. So I picked up my Nintendo 3DS and started playing a little Super Smash Bros. A couple days ago, and got in like 12 battles or so. I think I've played like over 50 battles at this point, which may not be a lot for some other people who get a lot more time in, but for me it's a pretty good amount. And then the battery on my 3DS XL needed recharging, so I finally started Battlefield 4 on the PlayStation 4, which I bought, I think, back in April, or maybe even last year. I'm not certain. But it was a game that I bought shortly after getting a hold of my PS4, but I have just never booted it up. And really pleased with that game. I'm like head over heels liking that game way more than Call of Duty Advanced Warfare. And enough so that I'm actually considering jumping into the multiplayer, which I've just kind of fallen away from first-person shooter multiplayer. But I really like the mechanics, and I'm loving the single-player campaign in Battlefield 4. Have any of you guys played that?
You know, I have, and I know Prime has finished it. I have not finished it. I like the single-player campaign, but it seems a little buggy, like people walking through vehicles and things like that. I also had some of my save points not registered. I had to play through a level again. But overall, I'm actually enjoying it, but I haven't played any multiplayer yet. I did jump into, on the multiplayer, they have this like island you can practice on with all the vehicles. And I did enjoy taking the ski-doos over the waves. I think the waves are awesome. Have you been there yet, Zeus, to that practice island? I don't know what they call it yet. I don't remember what they called it.
Yeah, I haven't played any of the multiplayer at this point, so I haven't even... I think I've opened up like my Battlelog screen, which I actually did by accident. So that's interesting. So they have... Because they used to have that in Battlefield 1942. I don't know if you remember on the PC, there used to be like a single player multiplayer mode where you would just play against bots just to kind of get a feel for the game, and you could also just run around and try out all the vehicles.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Actually, when I was getting ready for PAX East, I loaded up Battlefield 1942, and I tested that out, and that's actually pretty awesome. So I think you're playing against 63 other bots. It's a blast, and it brought back some good memories. But now, I think the biggest complaint was, unless you rented a private server, in the past, if you wanted to try to fly a chopper or a jet or try out some of the different weapons, you actually had, you had to join a real game. So in Battlefield 4, and I tried this first on the PC because it was on sale on the PC first, there's this island with everything on it, and you can try everything, the ships, the planes, the helicopters, you can try it all. And I just love the waves. I've never been in a game before that I can remember where there were such realistic waves in multiplayer. So you can actually get in a trough, and you can't be seen by other vehicles, you know, out on the ocean because you're in a low wave, you know, you're not, the crests are hiding you. So it's pretty cool. I just liked it.
Yeah, and I'll attest to the accuracy of the wave. Maybe not so much the physics, but at least, you know, what they kind of telegraph what it would be like and the visuals. So when I was in the military, one of the things I used to do was one of the divisions I was in charge of was the division who owned those ribs in the game, the rigid hull inflatable boats. And I was also a boarding officer. So you know, I spent a lot of time on ribs out on the open ocean, like, you know, significant distances from the mothership, so to speak, just kind of out on our own. And man, those scenes in Battlefield 4 when you get in the rib and you get out on the water, I'm like, holy crow, man, this feels like being back in my old job. It's actually pretty amazing.
That's pretty That's great to hear, Zeus. That's, you know, just to bring back whether that those are good or bad memories, but the fact that it's invoking those emotional connections is really neat. It's a good sign about the game engine, I guess.
Yep. So, and I know Battlefield Hardline, I thought it didn't review that well, but I think if Battlefield 4 continues to be this good, I may give that a try. So, and so just to wrap up my playlist, because my oldest daughter is yelling and screaming and apparently isn't settled down for bed just yet. So the other really interesting thing is, because I'm not a huge fighting game fan, I like them, but I'm not huge on them. One of the, you know, the two big games that I played this week were Super Smash Bros. On the 3DS, but then I also bought and I played a little bit of Mortal Kombat, I don't know if it's X or 10, I'm going to call it X, also on the PlayStation 4, and had a blast playing that.
Did you play 9? I really enjoyed the story in 9. I mean, it's kind of cheesy Mortal Kombat story, but I think the way they wove it in and out was really neat.
I did not. The last Mortal Kombat game I played, I'm not exactly certain on the franchise number. I think it was 4, but it was the one on, I think, the PlayStation 2 that was actually 3D. So instead of just being the 2D fighter, you could actually, you know, rotate around the arena. Do you know, DBQ, was that 4?
That sounds like it could have been. I think 4 was still a 2D one, though. I think it had some other subtitle once it went to the PlayStation, and they started to do kind of the virtual fighter or try for that three-dimension piece. But I don't remember what that was.
Yeah. I'm not sure exactly, but I guess the one thing that sticks out in my head is that was like the first one where they had you like leveling up and like gaining almost like perks or something like that. There was some type of system in that game more so than just the 2D fighter. And then the last things are, I've purchased these, but I have not played them. I logged into my PS4, realized that it was the first time that I'd logged in the month of April, so I almost had missed the PlayStation Plus freebies this month. But I picked up Never Alone, which is like a 2D indie side-scrolling game where you are playing an Inuit and trying to, I don't know the whole story, but you're trying to get somewhere in the Alaskan wilderness, and you have a wolf that's helping you out. And then I also got Tower of Guns, which is, I think it's a first-person shooter, but it's all about you going through these different towers and levels with all types of different guns, obviously. and then I actually grabbed Dishonored for the PS3. So both of those two games were for the PS4, but then I also grabbed Dishonored, which is also free this month, on the PlayStation 3, which for me is just pretty amazing, because that's definitely a AAA title game that I'm getting for free because I subscribe to PlayStation Plus.
Yeah, they've been having a pretty good amount of PlayStation 3 games that have been AAA titles, and Dishonored is certainly up there. Both Never Alone and Tower of Guns are also available on Xbox One, but they're paid, though. So that is a nice thing about some of PS Plus.
Yeah, no. What have you been playing this past week, DBQ?
I have been a little bit of stuff. Actually, not as much as I hoped I would as well. I played some of the new Mario Kart DLC with my kids, and that was enjoyable, I guess. The new tracks are fun. Some of the old retro tracks are back. But I did play around in the new 200cc, which makes everything super fast and really changes the game, I guess. I'm so used to power sliding around curves in X number of Mario Karts all the way back to Nintendo 64, probably, you know, and snaking and knowing how to hit those corners well. And then on 200, all of those physics kind of go out the window, and so I had to maybe relearn them, or I guess truthfully, I don't know if I care enough about those tracks to relearn them to be able to do that. So, but it was fun to play with my sons, and that's good. You know, just like Super Smash Brothers that you were playing, Zeus, it's fun to play alone, but it's also fun to play with groups of people as well. So, and then a couple weeks ago, I talked about playing the DC MOBA Infinite Crisis by Turbine. And so I played that again. I've been kind of picking at that a little bit, unlocking a little bit here and there, getting a feel. Still playing a lot of bots and not really playing with other people on my team, real players, but then playing against AI. So just getting a sense of it. And right after last week's show, I ended up with a beta code for Blizzard's Heroes of the Storm. The Heroes of the Storm is another MOBA. League of Legends, Dota, Blizzard is kind of where that started, with Defense of the Ancients, which was a mod from Warcraft 3, and then there were a whole bunch of legal rights over who owns the Defense of the Ancients or Dota title, and Valve has it for now. But that game is a whole lot more kind of intense, I guess. I've never played it, but I know enough about it to know that I'm okay with not playing it. Where Infinite Crisis, I really enjoy the characters because it's all multiple universe DC stuff, but it's still technical like League of Legends or Defense or Dota in terms of last hits, that if you're the person who gets a last hit on a character, you get the credit or you get extra experience. Where Heroes of the Storm, I don't really care about all the Blizzard characters because I never really got into World of Warcraft, but I'm really enjoying the gameplay. It's more casual, where everybody levels up together, so it's one big pool of experience, and it's been a whole lot of fun. I never really thought I'd get into it as much as I have. So it goes on open beta in the middle of May or so, and then totally open in the beginning of June, and I can't believe that I am excited to get back in and play a MOBA again. So if people have kind of been interested or kind of turned off by the intensity of some of the other ones, this one definitely, to me, it really fit a good spot there. Gray, I know you do some PC gaming. Have you dabbled in the MOBA scene at all?
No, I haven't. Players from the StarCraft world had me intrigued, but people were telling me, I don't know if that's a really good MOBA to get started with. So
I would say that, for people that haven't played a MOBA before, that Heroes of the Storm is probably, for me, it was the best place to start with. That I've dabbled in other ones, but I've always found them a little too technical, where this is kind of it's like playing, the difference between playing Gran Turismo and Forza Horizon, or Gran Turismo and Mario Kart, right, is that they're both semi-racing games, but the level of complexity in them is a little different. And so for me, picking up something like Heroes of the Storm, I think it could be really accessible for people.
Well, I'm going to have to try it now. Thank you for that. Now I have an excuse to go play as Jim Raynor or some other StarCraft hero. So thank you. I'm going to actually check it out.
Great, I'll send you, I have a couple beta keys. When I signed up for the beta, they sent out, not only put it on my account, but then gave me 4 keys to play with, because you are playing on a team with 4 other people, 5 other, 4 other people. So I'll be happy to send you a key. But yeah, you're playing kind of, I'll see if I keep coming back to it. So this is Avengers opening weekend and free comic book day, and so I decided to take the free to play plunge a little bit and dive into Marvel Heroes as well, which is an action RPG. It plays very much like Diablo, and so I've talked about Diablo and kind of those action RPG types of games here, both Diablo on the PC and Xbox One, and also Spirit Lords on mobile. But it plays out like that. This week it was all free Avengers characters, so it seemed like a good time to jump on. I don't know if I'll keep coming back to it, or if I find it kind of just as hollow as I have with some of the other action RPGs. So it may be the only time I talk about it, or I may keep coming back to it, kind of like surprised I have with Heroes of the Storm. So, Zeus, have you dabbled in any of those superhero comic or superhero games?
I haven't. I have a chronic problem with ever getting into any kind of MMO. I will admit it, it has been the superhero ones that have come the closest to almost pulling me in. The one thing I wanted to mention about Marvel Heroes is that, one comment and then a question. So the reason for the similarity between Marvel Heroes and Diablo is the executive game director is a former Blizzard developer who worked on Diablo 2. So his, you know, his creative tendencies have kind of leaned towards that kind of game design. The question I wanted to ask is, so I've seen lots of things about, like, this is, like, the most improved MMO of 2014 and all sorts of other awards, but isn't this the game that is, yes, it's free to play, but then, like, the prices to, you know, to actually, like, unlock another character and to really start to, like, customize an on-screen avatar that is different than, you know, what everybody else has, because everybody gets access to the same characters as part of their starter pack. Isn't the one where those prices are really kind of exorbitant to, like, you know, get Wolverine or Iron or Spider-Man or whatever, you know, mainstream characters are not in the starter pack?
That's my understanding of it. Yeah, I mean, I'll say that there's probably a reason I haven't touched it until right now. I remember when it came out, it's got most improved, you know, they're touting that, you're right, they're doing well in their marketing of touting it, but it's really probably because it launched not super great, and they kept coming back to it. They even rebranded it Marvel Heroes 2015, where it was always just Marvel Heroes, and so they've done a good job of kind of distancing themselves from that initial launch. But yeah, I remember, you know, when it was in beta and getting emails about being able to pre-order it and paying, what, like $99 for 5 different Spider-Man costumes or, you know, things like that.
Yeah, I want to say it was, if my memory is catching this correctly, it was, like, it was free to play, but then, like, to get an additional character beyond the starter pack was basically the cost, almost the equivalent cost of, like, a new game. So characters were, like, $50 a piece. You know, unlocking a character with, like, a special, like you said, like, costume set or something would be, like, $100. And I was like, so are they expecting you to just play as one character the whole time? Or kind of what are they trying to incentivize people to do?
So here's what I know, and I'll only say, you know, I'm not that far in yet. But I do know when I looked at it last year, after kind of the Guardians of the Galaxy and getting kind of the Marvel bug again, the Guardians of the Galaxy pack, I believe, was $39.99, which then allowed me to cancel that page and keep moving on without feeling too bad about it. But right now, it looks like that you start with one character, and they tell you that you can have up until level 10, and at level 10, they'll ask you if you want to try a different character. Like, if this wasn't a playstyle you liked, you can try one of the starter characters again until level 10. So, it took me all of 5 minutes to get to level 3, so I think it's a relatively fast curve. So I'm just about at level 10 now. I'm at 8.5 or so. So I can't really say, but it does seem that's been kind of their money making hooks. Of, I think you're right, Zeus, that, you know, the people that I've heard who have enjoyed it, you know, like Jeff Gerstmann at Giant Bomb, or looking at forum posts of people, it's people that have either paid up for the one character they really wanted, or kind of stumbled across one of the free ones, because the price point is not great, and it may be why I never really talk about it after level 10 and realize that I'm stuck without paying the full price of a game, and that may not be what I want. Otherwise, the only other thing I have been playing is got my third Destiny character up to level 20, which means I'm now wearing my exotic armor. But the most exciting part of that is that I played it on my 55-inch 1080p screen versus playing most of Destiny on a 32-inch 720p screen. So I played the Destiny beta back last summer on a PS3, and so when I played Destiny on Xbox One, I was super excited, and it looked beautiful. And now playing it on 1080p on a much larger screen, I'm realizing how much detail I was missing. So that was probably my excitement for the week. So a little bit of oddball stuff, but and a little bit of consistency with Destiny. How about you, Gray? What have you been up to?
Well, guys, I spent a lot of time working on our website, bandofgamers.net. And it's almost ready for prime time. Not quite, but that kind of sucked up a lot of my free time this week. But I did get to play some Destiny. Played a couple hours yesterday. Took a little break before heading out on the town with the wife. And I had to say, I was very excited that they had, that Xur had the Don't Touch Me gauntlets again for hunters. Definitely a must-have. I hope all you hunters pick those up. It's a must-have for the Raid of Crota. So every time you get hit, once you rank them up, every time you get meleeed or hit by a thrall or some other being, you will go invisible. And that's just awesome. It gets you through the lamp-lighting stage of the Raid of Crota very, very quickly and easily. So that was great. And so I played some Destiny, and then, you know, during the week, I listened to this Hunt the Truth podcast. I don't have either of you guys listened to that. I heard it, and I heard people say, well, yeah, it's kind of like this marketing thing. But I really got into it. DB, did you listen to that podcast?
Yeah, I haven't listened. It's up to, what, 5 or 6 now? I've only listened to the first couple. But, yeah, I really enjoy the Halo lore in the universe, and so it really kind of sucked me in and got me excited about the story with Halo 5.
Yeah, I'll tell you, being a fan of the first few books, right, Fall of Reach, and then the first few to follow that, you know, I really liked it. It was like, as a matter of fact, I'm waiting for episode 6. I'm like, come on, when's episode 6 going to drop? Because I listened to the first 5, or 0 through 5, like in a row, and I was like, this is audiobook quality stuff. I like it. I mean, it's a side story. It's about a reporter looking into the whole, you know, Master Chief, his history and his and people who know him and interviewing people, et cetera, et cetera. But no, I really liked it. So I didn't get a lot of gaming in, but if you haven't listened to Microsoft's Hunt the Truth podcast, check it out. I really enjoyed it. With that, let's go move into the news stories of the week. You know, every week we talk about news stories that came out. And I'm going to go ahead and stop by doing the Fabulous Five. I like to cover every week. I post news stories or share news stories to the CasualAdultGamers.com Facebook group. When I find them on IGN or GameSpot or Game Informer or other places on the web. And so I'll go ahead and start the news section by covering my Fabulous Five. First up, kind of sad to say it, but Ouya, the micro console for Android operating systems, is seriously in debt. Now, they had I think it was a Kickstarter, and they raised tons of money. But it looks like if they don't raise some additional money quickly, or if they're not purchased by somebody quickly, it looks like they're going to be going under. Have either of you guys been following Ouya? Either of you guys even have a Ouya? No?
I remember following it during the Kickstarter and how big it was and kind of its lackluster launch, but since then I haven't. I've just seen it discounted at retail.
And I've kind of kept an eye on it, maybe not that closely. It's more so the fact that I think most of us know I'm a big mobile gamer, and I think mobile gaming has a lot more fidelity than a lot of people think that it does. So I just kind of keep an eye on that space in general, particularly devices that will allow you to game on mobile operating systems with a full-size game controller. I knew Ouya was kind of going by the wayside. They are kind of less relevant with some of the bigger deals that are coming out now, such as the such as NVIDIA's Shield console and their Shield tablet. So.
Well, I hope somebody buys them and keeps them going. It's the thought process of having, you know, Android has so many games, and they'll be able to plug that into your TV and play it at home. Just sounds like a great idea. So, the other thing that happened this past week was Star Wars games. I'm talking about classic Star Wars games went on sale. A bunch of new ones showed up on GOG or GOG, as well as Steam. Of course, I got sucked up into it, and I bought a couple of old games that I probably shouldn't have bought, but and I probably own on console, but bought them on Steam, And, you know, I'm just a big fan. I'm such a fan of, like, X-Wing and of Rebel Assault. And did you guys play any of these old PC? Did you guys ever have any of those, like, Dark Forces or DBQ? Did you ever have any of those games?
Yeah, one of the first PC games that I can remember when my we got a new, I must have been what, a 486 that was finally more powerful enough, and I remember picking up a joystick, buying a joystick, and playing the original X-Wing and however many what, 3.5-inch discs. It was like 6 or 8 discs that it took to install. So really enjoyed, played a lot of that. That and Civilization took up a lot of time during certain years of my younger self, but otherwise I got a little bit into TIE Fighter, but I had kind of aged out of that a little bit. So, but now that they're all back on good old games and Steam, how about you, Zeus?
My big one that really got me hooked into that stuff was X-Wing Alliance, which X-Wing Alliance kind of had this mode that was analogous to like Rainbow Six Vegas Terrorist Hunt, where basically you could go in and have access to all of the ships in the game and kind of set up your own little scenarios, and just fight, on whatever map you wanted to with whatever ships you wanted to. I also played Jedi Knight Jedi Outcast 2, as well as one of my favorite ones was Jedi Knight Jedi Academy, which is one of those few rare games that I actually finished, and really had a great, awesome story all the way through. And then the last one was kind of, arguably, it might be tough to call it an older game. It actually came in fairly late, but was Star Wars Empire at War, which was just one of the best RTS games that I ever played, fully built around the Star Wars universe and way far and beyond that that Age of Empires Star Wars mod that that most other people played.
Yeah, the Galactic Battlegrounds or whatever that one was called. Yeah, no, that was
Right.
that's there. This actually today, earlier today, I picked up that Steam bundle with Galaxy at War and all those Kyle Katarn games, and the one I really was excited to get back and play was also Republic Commando, the kind of squad-based prequel first-person shooter.
Right, yeah, I played that also, and that's actually I'm amazed that I forgot that. That is actually probably my favorite of all those games.
So I have to say, one of the two games I picked up on Steam was Republic Commando. And I have it lying around here somewhere for the Xbox. But my son really loved it. He said it was awesome. And I just love that first person Star Wars universe. You know, I'm such a huge fan of Dark Forces and Dark Forces 2 Jedi Knight. Kyle Katarn, just a huge, awesome fan. Played all those Jedi Knights up through. I think Jedi Academy as I started peeling off. But man, X-Wing, the original X-Wing, I think I actually finished that entire game. My neighbor was playing it at the same time. And at the last mission, I think you actually blow up the Death Star. I can't remember, it's been so long, but playing on a 386 at the time that I built from scratch. Awesome, awesome memories. And then playing with my kids, doing Jedi Academy, I mean, X-Wing Alliance had great LAN multiplayer support, if I remember correctly, and that was just a blast to play that game. So, just so happy to see some of those games coming back, so they're playable on modern operating systems. And any other Zeus? Any other thoughts on those games?
I wanted to ask. I know we didn't really have it in our news rundown, but have either one of you guys seen the newest Star Wars Battlegrounds trailer for the game that's supposed to launch in November?
Yes, so I think it's Battlefront.
Right,
And
you're right. Sorry.
I've been listening to a lot about that. I actually watched it, and a lot of the other podcasts are talking about that. And I'll tell you what, let's save that to your section, which is up after mine. Let me quickly get through the rest of mine. I got another big thing that happened this week was Black Ops 3. And not only was the release date announced, but also it was announced that you'll be able to play the lead character as either a male or female, a la Mass Effect, right? So I think that's great. I'm very glad they did that. I think all games that can do that should do that because you know what? I have two daughters. Why are they always playing as guys? They shouldn't have to, right? They should be able to play as ladies as well. And then also there was a big reveal on the Destiny Osiris PvP. Not only did it sound complicated to me, but I'm not a PvP guy, so I'll be skipping that. I'm actually going to wait for the big reveal, in my opinion. The big reveal is this Wednesday, Prison of Elders, which is some new co-op arena or some new co-op. It's not a raid, but it's something to do. I don't know if it's Firefight or Horde or what it's going to be, but I'm excited about that because I love Destiny. I mean, it's like 20 missions, 3 strikes. They all can be played by yourself or as with co-op, and it's just a lot of fun. So with that, Zeus, let me pitch it back over to you. And what do you know about Battlefront? Have you seen it? Do you like what you see so far?
I actually didn't cover this in the news myself, but I did watch the trailer. Thoroughly amazed at the graphics quality of the trailer. Usually, I'm not a guy who falls head over heels about how great the graphics are in a game, but man, it was just huge theatrical impact from that trailer as it was staged, and your opportunity to play. To drive so many of the different, classic vehicles from the original trilogy, the concept of, and that's what I loved about X-Wing Alliance is, you had the opportunity to fly, Y-Wings and TIE Bombers and all those kind of fringe spacecraft that you used to see in the movies, but, they never really talked about directly. You would only find out about them by reading some of the extended universe, like novelizations and stuff, but I did watch the trailer, and I've never played a Battlefront game. I think the most I've done is played like a demo on like the PlayStation Portable. That kind of game just didn't interest me as a licensed property. But I'm really excited about this fall's release of that.
I'm just happy to hear somebody else mention playing Battlefront on the PSP. That's where I played it on the PC and enjoyed it, but I really ended up getting into it on the PSP. Both kind of the the Galactic Conquest, which is like Risk with battle with Star Wars guys, and then I played even on the PSP. I ended up playing it online and doing a ton of space battles, playing multiplayer online on that tiny little PSP screen. But I think, there are people that have been talking about how there's not going to be the space battles, and I would assume that that's going to take a totally different engine to do that, and that'll come maybe with the Rogue One movie that's coming out in a year or so. But I'm really interested to see what actual gameplay looks like in E3, but at the same time, the Star Wars fanboy and me and my kids are excited to play that together, so...
Yeah, I heard an interview today of somebody who's actually played or the actual gameplay, and they say because that cutscene we all saw of Battlefront was in-engine, but it's in-engine, not actual gameplay, so 100% of the processing power went towards rendering that. So the people who have actually seen the actual gameplay say it's very, very close to that, slightly less fidelity, but still, when you see the woods and you see all the light filtering through the branches of the trees and all that, they said it's still pretty awesome. It's just a slight downgrade from that because you're actually playing the game. You're not just rendering a cutscene. So it should absolutely be beautiful. I'm so looking forward to it. Back to you, Zeus, because I know you had some items in the news you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, so these will be real quick. I'm less concerned about the news of this and more so wanting to kind of ask your guys' opinion. So, either this past week or it may have even been the week before, but Warner Brothers Interactive, who is the publisher behind the Batman Arkham Knight game, which is due to release worldwide this June on the 23rd, announced that they are allowing, I think, pre-orders for a season pass for, the first 6 months, I think it is, of DLC. And that season pass is going to be $40. So if you pre-order and so the premium edition or whatever is $100. So that gets you the full game, probably a couple of add-ons, but then also gets you the season pass at $40. So if you buy that thing, you're talking about $100. And it's just interesting to me that season passes are at the point where they are 2/3 of the cost of the game. And I heard another podcast, I won't mention their name, but are these guys, the whole company seems to be bent on this concept that games are the cheapest that they've ever been. And I'm not really sure if those guys know how to accurately calculate inflation, but games, you know, the games went to $60 with the 360 and the PS3. They were $50 for the original Xbox and PS2. And the PS1, or maybe the generation before that, were like 40. So, I don't know. I mean, are you guys big buyers of season passes to kind of circumvent, you know, being nickel and dimed for DLC, or how do you guys approach it? And does the $40 price point bother you?
So I can see the point of games being cheaper as long as you wait a month or two after release. Right? Like, I ended up picking up Shadow of Mordor, which is another WB game, Warner Brothers game, this week for $15. You know, the Batman Arkham City came out, and, you know, within a year after the Game of the Year edition, with all the DLC, you could buy it for, I remember paying $12 new at GameStop. You know, so I nice. Think it is... For the people that want it now, companies know that they're milking you hard, right? Because the $40, that's three quarters of that price for that brand new game, you know, or which isn't a whole lot different than Battlefield Premium is $50. I'm sure Battlefield or Battlefront Premium for Star Wars, I wouldn't be surprised if it's $60 just because it's Star Wars and they know that people are going to play it. You know, that's double the price for a few more multiplayer maps. Or Destiny, which we, you know, Gray, you and I love. The collector's edition of that, or the expansion pass, is $35 for two expansion pieces. So, yeah, Zeus, I think it's a really, I don't know, it doesn't make me that excited. That I'd rather be patient and wait for the discount as much as I want to, you know, give the company that produced something I like good money. I also know that I don't want to be fleeced in the process. Gray, what are your thoughts?
You know, I always try to avoid DLC because working, even if you work just one job, full-time job, 50 hours a week, there's not a lot of time for DLC, right? There are so many games coming out so often that, you know, once you experience everything that comes in that Battlefield or Call of Duty disc version, by the time you get through all of that as a working adult, man, there's other great games out already. So I do see DLC as a great way to keep a game going for people who just love it. I mean, for me, I worried about the whole Destiny DLC for a while, but you know, at some point I said, you know what, I want to keep playing this game. There's nothing else out there that I want to play as much as this. So I spent the $35, and now I'm actually excited about the next, you know, The House of Wolves. If you haven't seen the theatrical trailer for that, it's pretty cool. So, you know, I don't usually buy DLC, and I think $40, you know, without the details on it, are you know, it does sound steep. I think marketing-wise, they probably made a mistake on releasing the price for the DLC without 100% of the details being ready. Having said that, I want to go back to something Zeus said about the price of games. Other people are talking about this, and I agree with this concept as well. Releasing a game for $60 that is like Rainbow Six Siege, everything we know about it, is going to be 5v5 multiplayer and that's it. To me, it does not seem like a good value. When I bought Rainbow Six Vegas 2 or Rainbow Six Vegas 1, I got a single-player campaign, which was decent. I got co-op single-player. In Vegas 1, it was four-player. In Vegas 2, it was two-player. Then I got online versus. Then I got online co-op. So you look at a game like Destiny that gives you almost the same thing as Vegas did. That is a value. You know, that 10-hour single-player that you can go through back playing as co-op, that you can then go on multiplayer and play co-op multiplayer like in Strikes and Destiny, and then you can play versus like the Crucible, that's a $60 value. For Rainbow Six Siege and other games like it that are planned to come out to only offer something as shallow as 5v5 only, to me is not a good value. That's an exceptionally bad value. And that's why I get excited about Black Ops 3, is because you'll have single player, then single player co-op, then co-op zombies, then multiplayer, and maybe if we're lucky, multiplayer combat training, which is co-op multiplayer online. That's a value to me.
And yeah, I guess the only area where I would maybe back off of that a little, in my own personal opinion, is when it comes to a PC game, because you go back to games like Quake 3 and Unreal Tournament, which really on the PC started this whole concept of games that would come out that would be multiplayer only, and they were the same price as a retail game that would have had a campaign, but the extensibility of those games in terms of the mod community and even what the publisher and developer put out on their own and the replayability, just in my mind, you know, puts those games right up there with, you know, with a game that came out that would come out with a solid single player campaign at the same price.
Unreal Tournament's a great example, but that had a lot of maps. It was drop-dead gorgeous, but it also had multiple modes. You had free-for-all, you had Team Slayer, or what, a Team Deathmatch, you had Capture the Flag. It wasn't just, I mean, multiplayer only is one thing, but if you had gotten Unreal Tournament and it was just 5v5, you know, capture the assault the target or rescue the hostages, I think it would have been a flash in the pan.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. DBQ, before I touch a little bit on Project Cars, do you have any opinion on those topics?
I'm not against DLC at all. I really enjoy it. I've invested plenty of money in DLC in worlds that I care about. You know, the Dragon Age and Mass Effect worlds, I have enjoyed thoroughly all that DLC. The Borderlands world, I have plugged DLC there. You know, they supported that for 2 years after in Borderlands 2. You know, there were all kinds of little holiday-themed releases, and, you know, I think it is, for a game in a universe that you really care about, that's great. I think the hard part is, you know, both with something like Batman, or certainly Evolve fell into this trap, is that they're putting it out there so soon because they're trying to potentially make the money, that there's not the investment of the player base yet to know if they care enough about those worlds or the community, the player community, to dive in and commit to that.
Cool, very cool. So the last thing I want to touch on for my news story is, you know, Project Cars is coming out here towards the middle of May. So for all you gearheads out there, and I know that there are plenty of those within Casual Adult Gamers, hopefully everyone is just as excited as I am about that title releasing. You know, what I'm really looking forward to, it's got a number of cars, and actually, surprisingly, no Italian cars. So because of licensing deals, there are no Lamborghinis or Ferraris in the game at launch. But it has tons of these tracks that I periodically write and talk about that are, you know, for me as a big racing game fan, are these tracks that I have literally been racing for almost 20 years. You know, some of which I've actually, you know, been to see racing events. So, of course, there's Laguna Seca, there is Sonoma, there is Spa-Francorchamps in France, where they race. At least part of that track they use to race the Le Mans, but is also a Formula One track. There's Brno, there is Willow Springs, and Road America. Unfortunately, I didn't see Road Atlanta in the list, and I also didn't see Sebring, which are two of my favorite North American road tracks. But this game should be pretty exciting. So it drops, I think, on the 12th of May, and will be available for PC, Xbox, and PlayStation, if I have my information correct. Gray, I know you're a big racing fan also. Have you been keeping an eye out for this, and are you thinking you're going to be in on this and playing it multiplayer with some CAG members?
Well, I'll tell you what, this is the best-looking game that I've seen since Forza and Gran Turismo. It looks awesome. I'm going to be one of the laggers on this. I'll be one of the guys waiting for the reviews to see how many of my friends are playing it and pick it up. But it definitely looks awesome.
Sweet. And DB, are you a gearhead also?
I am not as much. I enjoy kind of an arcadey racer much more than a sim. So, but I think you're right, though. This looks great. The fact that it's multi-platform is kind of the first one in this generation to do that, more than the crew. And so I think it should be really exciting to have that community out there.
Very cool, very cool. DBQ, what do you have going on in the news this week?
Not too much, because we're kind of hitting close to our time frame here, but a couple of things. One, in terms of just a little bit of housekeeping and path correction, last week we talked a lot about Steam and Valve and Bethesda charging for mods, paid mods in Skyrim, and by the first day of the work week, they had canceled those, so the beginning of the week they had shut those down, and Valve had said that they'll probably go back to it, but this was not the game and the time, so we'll see what happens there. So if you listened to our last podcast and we talked about how we think this is not such a bad idea, the community out there kind of thought a little bit differently than we did and spoke, and Valve shut that down. So the only other piece I want to bring up is, and this is where people can maybe call me a little bit hypocritical as we're talking about pricing on DLC and not paying for things. At the same time, this weekend I just paid Bungie $25 for a t-shirt and a shader for their Nepal earthquake relief that now and through the 24th of May, Bungie is selling a Destiny t-shirt with the Traveler and Nepal t-shirt, along with an in-game shader and icon, but all 100% of the proceeds go to Nepal-related earthquake relief efforts. So while I may not be super excited to give Bungie $35 for two expansion packs, I'm happy to support them as they're trying to work for earthquake relief efforts. Did you guys see anything else out there for news stories? But that's pretty much all I had. We've covered quite a bit.
Yeah, I haven't. Thank you for telling me about that Nepal thing. I'm going to definitely check that out on Bungie's site. Anything to help those people and the show that gamers do care, I want to be a part of. So thank you for that, DBQ. Anything else, Zeus, before we wrap up the show?
No, I think we covered it pretty well.
Well, my friends, I really appreciate you coming out and recording this podcast with us, and I appreciate all you out there for listening. We would love to hear from you in the relatively near future. Bandofgamers.net will be launched, but until then, you can find all of us over at casualadultgamers.com. And for DBQ Hams, Zeus Adamus, and myself, Greylock3491, I want to thank you for listening, and as always, peace.